You are Locked On Wolverines, your daily podcast on the Michigan Wolverines, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Happy Friday. We are back and doing it as promised. We have a big special guest. You know him, you love him. We had him a couple times over throughout the season here on the Locked On Wolverines podcast, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. We're bringing on Mike Golic Jr., the DraftKings host, the famed Notre Dame, former Notre Dame player. He's the one that the one that we get along with, right? Like we, you know, every rivalry has its series of figures that you're like, you know what, that guy's actually cool. He's Locked On Wolverines version of that from Notre Dame. So excited to have you back on, Mike.
Yeah, happy to walk across enemy lines here. I feel like the further and further away I get from putting on a helmet and running into people, and the more and more I go around and do the, you know, college football analyst thing now, it makes it a lot easier because now all of a sudden I don't really got to answer for anything anymore. So It's a lot easier to walk in. Plus, I made the mistake of visiting Ann Arbor this year and getting to experience that as a broadcaster and not as a player. And it was way more enjoyable than I was hoping it would be because now I kind of like going there.
Now, did anyone hand you a winged helmet and just kind of be like, let's just get him out there for a couple, see how he feels? Did that happen?
No, you know what? I think everyone knows better than that. We all know that there's a line in that process. And quite frankly, at this point, I'm not going to do anything to help the cause out there, especially with the big beef you guys got up front now. So I think we're all settled in our spots right now. I came in, I enjoyed some of the watering holes. I went and walked around the diag. So I got it all in there.
Well, let's talk about that experience. That was the MSU game. That's right. So, I mean, aside from the shenanigans that happened after the game, I mean, what were your biggest takeaways? Not it doesn't even have to be from the game, just but from visiting Ann Arbor, being down there on the sidelines. I was sad we didn't get to actually meet up there, but what were your biggest takeaways? Things that maybe surprised you just by virtue of being there, not in a Notre Dame uniform.
Yeah, the differences between Midwest campuses are a lot harder to find than you would imagine. Like all of the things that I love and enjoy about my campus in South Bend and the things that I enjoyed in Notre Dame, a lot of them are present in Ann Arbor around that campus, especially when you get, like I mentioned, around the diag, when you're actually walking around through campus. There's a lot of the similarities there. It's a beautiful setup. And, you know, it's got the feel, especially for a game like that, that you want leading into a rivalry, right? You could feel the population of the surrounding town swell. My favorite part of being on campus when I was a player was Fridays when everyone would roll into town. And for that game, especially being an in-state rivalry game, it's a lot easier for that to happen. And you see that sort of swell of the population, and the energy around there was just palpable. It was exactly what a rivalry game was supposed to be. And so I also got to pie some kid in the face on campus. There was some student group that was there trying to raise money. I don't even remember what it was for, but they let me whip cream pie a kid in the face. So anytime I do get to also get a little bit of that out where I'm like, all right, I got my dig in on campus there, it felt like a net positive.
That is absolutely amazing. And why is it that I haven't been able to have that opportunity as someone who is still paying my student loans to the University of Michigan? So we need to figure out a way to make that happen, people.
It is interesting too. Now that I think of it, the last time I was there, I got to see then Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren speaking on a panel, and my, how times have changed already since the end of the season on that front. Now I have to say former Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren, as he's taken the president job over in Chicago,
which is wild. I mean, he comes in, gets everyone against him pretty quickly with the COVID stuff, and then suddenly adds UCLA and USC, and everyone's like, okay, maybe he's not so bad. And he's like, all right, I'm out. I dip. So it's kind of crazy how quickly that's going. But let's look kind of back and forward at the same time, if that makes any sense. Because when we first talked, it was a couple days before the season kicked off. You were really high on Ohio State and kind of medium on Michigan, right? Like it was one of those things where you were like, Ohio State's the toast of the conference, which I don't think you could blame anybody for feeling that way. I know, I didn't, not to toot my own horn, I was an outlier by saying that Michigan probably ran the conference. I was an outlier. So you weren't wrong in your stance. That's the way everyone pretty much saw it. But why do you think that those roles have kind of flipped now that we've had a whole season's worth of being able to look at both teams?
It is interesting because if you talked before the playoff, I think we would agree that those roles had flipped. I do wonder what the sentiment is after the playoff, because when you look at those final four teams, the two best teams we saw out in the field in any of the semifinal games were Ohio State and Georgia. Like, that's pretty evident. And so it was weird to see Ohio State finally play up to the skill on their team. But you're right as far as down in, down out. I think the thing I misjudged the most about Michigan's team was the defense. I think having to replace what you did in Aiden Hutchinson and David Ajabo on that side of the football, you know, Dax Hill in the secondary, you were replacing a meaningful NFL caliber starter at every level. And so to see the way they replaced that, we're still able to harass quarterbacks around the conference. Obviously, their easy slate of scheduling, especially early in the season, is well publicized and well noted, but they also went out and made those teams look that inferior to them. It wasn't like they played with their food on those occasions. And then you look when they got later into the year, Penn State as a common opponent between them and Ohio State, markedly better win for Michigan than it was for Ohio State, who got taken down to the wire in that game. And so I think it was the consistency. The floor has been raised so much because clearly defensively you've managed to roll in enough talent and enough recruiting depth to be able to replace marquee NFL talent the way we see Alabama, Georgia, and others do. But offensively, you know, back-to-back Joe Moore Award winning offensive line, having that as the bedrock for an offense that still didn't really realize a downfield passing game until the Ohio State game, and really only in that game. The rest of it being able to feed off of a two-headed monster at running back. And I know, you know, got the good news as far as one member of that backfield making and announcing his return. But I think just in general, seeing now, all right, the floor is consistently raised here in the Harbaugh era based on that identity you've built there. And it's been enough to against an Ohio State team that maybe let their foot off the gas a bit in terms of how they operate in the trenches. Again, it's really hard for me to digest them based off the Ohio State team I saw show up against Georgia, because that team, the offensive line did play a bunch better. That team, you did have a quarterback who was mobile in a way that really helped that offense. And so it was a bit of a mind bleep at the end of the season. But I think all those are the Michigan reasons why I initially misjudged that based on what we ended up getting in 22.
Now, how much do you think that that can kind of carry forward into this next year? Obviously, there's currently some question, given that we don't know the status of Jim Harbaugh for the essentially third straight year. All indications are on our end over here that it is going to get done. Sounds like it's going to be a matter of a week or so, if not days. But if everything can kind of stay the same, they don't lose anymore via the transfer portal, at least from a pivotal standpoint, how much do you feel like Michigan can continue to be in this new role that it's been in for the last 2 years of being the Big Ten champion and being kind of the elixir to what Ohio State has kind of been able to do over the last several, well, really over the last couple decades?
Yeah, no, I think there's a very high chance. I mean, listen, if Jim Harbaugh comes back, then you're returning a ton of the same weapons that you can do. Most specifically, like the thing we always look at, right? Quarterback, head coach, coordinator, all that good stuff. Like J.J. McCarthy coming back, Blake Corum coming back. You know, what your offensive line has become in this era. All things now that you're going to be able to count on. And so for Michigan, then the challenge becomes, all right, how do you keep evolving this? Because we saw maybe it was hubris in the CFP semi. Maybe it was just a bad plan. Maybe it was, you know, the injury to Schoonmaker that I think probably didn't get talked about enough in how it affected what Michigan wanted to do in big personnel in that game. But you really got to develop the downfield passing game a lot more. Like, you had some guys and there were just opportunities, and outside of Ohio State where you made big plays, it never showed up in a meaningful way. And it creates an off-speed pitch for when you need it the most. It's not so you can beat Rutgers and the Big Ten West or anything like that. But now your sights are set on the playoffs. You heard and saw this Michigan team talk about, hey, we want another crack at Georgia. We want this, that. We want to get over that other hump now in the college football playoff semis. And that's about being a more well-rounded team. And that includes your coaching staff being willing to lean into some of those things more. I mean, the inexplicable lack of JJ McCarthy rushing attempts in the first half of that semifinal game against TCU, I'm sure are going to be a thing that gets talked about this offseason as, all right, maybe we don't want to run JJ and put him in harm's way all the time during the regular season, but postseason, it's got to be get up and go, because that's an advantage that you have in college football. That's what we saw the eventual national champions do in Georgia pretty early on in their game against TCU. And so it's just continuing to say, all right, we know who we are, and now we've got to continue to add to the tool belt.
Now, you mentioned the word hubris, and I've used that a couple times in regards to what we saw in that CFP semifinal. How surprised were you that that game went kind of the way it did? I know everyone pretty much had essentially said, like, well, Michigan's going to win this game. I still believe if that game was played 10 times, Michigan probably wins 8 of them. But how surprised were you, and like, what were the biggest surprises in that game as far as from a Michigan standpoint looking at that game?
So I wasn't surprised that TCU was able to make this a dogfight. They've done that all year long. You know, Georgia's just the most talented team in college football right now. They're the reigning two-time national champions. Like, they're built different than everybody else. Maybe with the exception of, you know, talent-wise, you know, Alabama, Ohio State, like a couple of the other, you know, programs that just are able to roll in the recruiting talent year after year the way that that team does. But I think the thing that surprised me was just how long it took Michigan to get to their off-speed pitch once Schoonmaker went down. Because I get it, you were thin and young at tight end by the end of that game. That had been the war of attrition with you know, the Eric Aull situation during the season that ended up being without him. Michigan loves to go big in their run sets here. They want to go big, beat you up in the box, big personnel sets, multiple tight ends and back, stuff like that. And that clearly wasn't working. They were having some issues with the angles that 3-3-5 defense from TCU posed. And it took them all the way till the second half to go, all right, well, we got to get lighter and we got to run our quarterback a little bit more. And I think that for me was surprising, given the fact that I think the offensive staff that you got there is really talented. And I think the players that you've got there are capable. And we saw that show up in big spots. And so that for me, the adjustment that needed to be made there needed to be made a lot sooner. And I was confused as to why it wasn't.
Yeah, totally. I you're the first person that I've heard really kind of talk about the loss of Luke Schoonmaker. I mean, I think I've seen a little bit on message boards here and there, but I think that you are right, that is something that has been kind of undervalued, especially in the blocking and what have you.
Because I saw a lot of people having gripes about, you know, the Joe Moore Award winning offensive line. You go and look through that games. Michigan had a couple of run throughs that they missed in the offensive line. There were one or two gaps in protection, but for the most part, they were getting whooped on the edges. It was D. Winters and the linebacker core from TCU taking it to the edges of that Michigan offense that just couldn't hold up in the way it was used to. So now all those cutback runs that you wanted, all those lanes you wanted for Donovan Edwards, didn't exist anymore because it was getting caved in from all sides there. So I just felt like that obviously anytime run game stuff doesn't go well, people want to put it on the offensive line and they've got their part in it, but it was overwhelmingly, hey, this identity that had been a huge part of that too, just cracked at the foundation in this game. And then had to be, once they got to it in the second half, you saw, all right, a little bit more 11 personnel, spread things out a little bit more, involve JJ in the equation. The offense in the third quarter was what you should, well, you know, what I think Michigan fans would have liked to have seen a lot earlier in that game, given the personnel thing that they ran into.
Yeah. And JJ finally, it seemed like he and Roman Wilson really connected a lot in the game in a way that I thought that was going to happen throughout the season. We saw it the first couple weeks of the season and then kind of disappeared Roman had his concussion, but that is the thing that I've been kind of waiting to see. And when you're on a team that can, like you kind of alluded to this already about like wanting to have that downfield passing game to prepare for teams like Ohio State and down the road. How much of a challenge do you think it is when you're in a situation like Michigan had been for most of the year, when you have Blake Corum, when you have Donovan Edwards as well, and you can just run all over everyone? How much of a shift in mentality do you think it is to be like, because wouldn't you want, If you think that you can do like you did against Penn State and run for 418 yards when you're supposed to be going up against one of those teams that is supposed to stop the run, like Urban Meyer came out and said they will stop the run, and it was like again, hubris, although it worked. How challenging do you think it is to, if you're a coaching staff, to sit there and say, we can't just only do this thing that we're really good at?
Yeah, it's a major challenge. And I think it's always this balance that we hear going into big games for team of, hey, we're going to do what we do and make them adjust to us versus say, all right, well, we can do a version of what we do. We can do what we do just with different looks, different window dressing, stuff like that. But it's a big challenge for coaches, a big challenge for players. I mean, this is, you know, not even unique to just college football, right? You can go all the way back to the, you know, I think of the Peyton Manning led Colts in Indianapolis, or even his time in Denver, where you're an air raid passing team. You've got one of the best gun, you know, quarterbacks and signal callers, the sheriff in the history of pro football. And then you get to critical moments late, and all of a sudden he's like, hey, you know, in the Super Bowl, they lost to the Seahawks. Hey, we want to run now. It's like, brother, we haven't been a running team all year long. We don't have the time under task with those things to be able to execute in this kind of situation. And so trying to go with a full identity shift in that situation would be really difficult. And that's not what I'm advocating for at all, but it's just, you had to make it look different. So yeah, it is a major adjustment though, to answer your question. And that's why I wonder if during the year you'll see an added emphasis on it. Like that Michigan State game that I called was a perfect example. Going into that game, I was like, all right, Michigan State for two straight years has not had a secondary capable of stopping pretty much anybody in college football. And so you've got an opportunity against a team with an advantage there to take advantage of it, to try and go for those reps. I get it's a rivalry game. You want to win that first and foremost, throw out the record books, all that stuff. But it just struck me as an opportunity lost in that game where you didn't even see the attempts in spots where it made sense to go and try and attack that purposely, consistently, and get the reps at that in that game. And so I do wonder if maybe that'll be more part of things next year is, hey, we got to work more consistently as the year goes along to develop that stuff when we've got opportunities, not just against, you know, the week out of conference slate, but once we get into conference play, even in the offseason, emphasizing that, all the things that, again, they're good coaches on that staff. Sherrone Moore is a guy that I have a ton of respect for in that Michigan offensive staff room. So I'm not going to tell him anything about coaching. He knows what he's doing, but they've been building this the right way all along. Foundation, add-ons, change at quarterback and McCarthy. And now that you've got so many of those pieces coming back, is the next step continuing to add more to the war chest and the tool chest for 2023?
Yeah, I think that it is good to have a little bit more of a balance, and I'm with you on, yeah, it was very satisfying, I'm sure, to Michigan fans to see Michigan still being able to run for several hundred on Michigan State. But I do agree, it did seem like a lost opportunity to get that passing game going. Last one for you, just kind of breaking out of this this more Michigan centric idea, because you are someone that covers college football from a national standpoint, and I'm totally putting you on the spot. So if you don't have something right out the gates, it's fine. We can talk through it. We can bypass it, however you want to handle it. What teams do you think could be those surprise teams entering 2023? We just saw TCU go from being nothing to being in the national championship game. I'm not saying like which ones are going to be that level, but it seems like every year we try to make North Carolina a thing and it's almost never actually a thing. But what teams like that could there be that maybe take that step forward that we've kind of long been waiting on?
Yeah. So I think as far as, I'll give you a couple of levels of it, because while you talk about North Carolina, I'd stick in the ACC and say, one, they're going to have a shot because Drake May is that good. Now they've got some changes in that staff that they're undergoing this offseason, but I think because of Drake May, they're going to have an opportunity. Clemson just made a major hire in getting Garrett Riley over there. I think having Dabo say that we're not going to sit on our hands, but they don't really qualify in this conversation. Florida State's the one that people are circling right now. Jordan Travis announced that he's coming back. Jared Verse on defense. A lot of positive momentum from this season. So they're that next tier down of teams that might be able to do that. But if you're really looking for the one that seems to have all of the same ingredients that you had go into TCU, new coach coming over, a program that's trying to maybe redefine itself a little bit based on what we've seen in the previous era, Wisconsin's an interesting place to think about. Luke Fickell coming over there from Cincinnati. It sounds like they're going to bring Phil Longo in there and try and reinvent an offense that for so long has been multiple tight ends, under center. It's what we've been used to of Wisconsin going all the way back to when Russell Wilson was there. And I think now as you exit the Paul Chryst era and you try and move into something new here, they're a fascinating one to look at because you're a well-resourced program. You're one that if it looks different and all of a sudden, maybe you just change the vibe a little bit around there. And you've got Luke Fickell, who's had to go and knows the Big Ten well, but has had to go outside in the group of five and built a playoff team at that level, helped that team come up and overcome a lot there. I think they're a fascinating one to keep an eye on because Lord knows the Big Ten West is also ripe for the picking right now as you've got movement with Purdue, Jeff Brohm heading back home to Louisville, some volatility in a side of the conference that really didn't do much. No one wanted to win it this year. And so I think they're an interesting one to keep an eye on for a lot of those reasons.
You're absolutely right. And I'm curious to see like the how that ends up working. Barry Alvarez has long had that, you know, his I don't want to say his thumb on the meter there, but it's he's long been the kind of domineering force. And it's always been, you will do things my way or the highway. And suddenly you're absolutely right. The Phil Longo thing is one thing to bring in Luke Fickell. It's another thing entirely to let Luke Fickell bring in Phil Longo and say, we're going to run and gun a little bit. And I'm curious to see if they're able to do it right away. I'm curious to see if they're able to kind of run that, that side of the division. And it, you know, some of those teams aren't going to go away. Like you mentioned Purdue with Ryan Walters, and will Illinois still be able to be, that high end? How many safeties can Iowa get this year to, would they be able to figure that out? But, anyway, thank you very, very much, Mike. I really appreciate you joining us, and, we'd love to have you back sometime, let's say in spring or so when we have, maybe a little bit more to talk about.
Beautiful. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That was Mike Golic Jr. Super happy to have him on. It's always a pleasure. I know that there's some that they can't look outside of the rivalries and what have you, but he's just awesome. I always appreciate him coming on, especially because it really does kind of feel like, what are we going to talk about? We're going to continue having guests. We've got some other ones lined up here and there. That we'll get to kind of more when that is 100% confirmed for a day and time. All right, we're just going to continue discussing some random what have you. We'll do that here momentarily, but before we do, betonline.net is your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there. From pro football to college bowl season, which is over, basketball and World Cup, which is also over, we got it all at betonline.net. If you love sports podcasts, you can even find those at BetOnline as well. We're always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, big thanks again to Mike Golic Jr. for joining us. I appreciate when he comes on very much. And you know, it's kind of a mea culpa when it comes to that. So, in terms of how things started versus how things ended. So it will be interesting to see where Michigan kind of goes from here. And there continues to be optimism that the Jim Harbaugh thing is going to be done here. It was kind of the weird situation yesterday with Santa Ono tweeting like really good conversations. And then Jim Harbaugh via the Michigan football Twitter account, quote tweeting it seconds later, being like, well, I really appreciate him liking me, which in a way is kind of what I know, like people were making fun of it. I saw some of the articles out there and some of the tweets out there. Isn't that kind of what this is, right? It's kind of a situation where Jim Harbaugh wants to feel the love. So if he's kind of replying, like it reminds me of Viserys in early on in Game of Thrones, when, you know, he's told like, you're going to get a crown, you're going to get whatever. And he's like, oh, that's all I ever wanted. In a sense, that's kind of what that was, right? It was like a confirmation of like, this is what I want. So they'll work towards it, and it will be, I think it will come to a positive conclusion. Hopefully it's the last time that this happens until he departs the program. Hopefully in some time after getting over the mountaintop and all of that kind of stuff. But unfortunately, this is just going to have to play out the way it's playing out for a little while. Could be days, could be a week. I think it will probably be done before then. You would hope that it would be done before, you know, we got 2 days from now, you know, by Monday, players have to announce, hey, I'm coming back or I'm going. Not a lot left, really. It's Zach Zinter, who it sounds like he's probably coming back. And outside of him, Michael Barrett, Cornelius Johnson, it's really those guys. And I feel pretty good about all those guys. You've already got two guys back and Trevor Keegan. I mean, that was huge news last night. And Blake Corum. So, and then you've lost Iabi Oki, unfortunately, to the transfer portal. That one hurts me. That one hurts me. Because I love Iabi. It makes sense, though, that it sounds like he's probably going to re-team with Biff Poggi. So, that is what it is. But, yeah. I don't know how much more I've got to say. It's Friday. It's been a week. I'm a little congested for reasons I don't know why. So I think we're just going to call it. I don't know how long this is going because we're splitting between Zoom and a regular one, but we're going to call it. So if this is 18 minutes, I'm sorry, Locked On people. And I'm sorry to you, the audience. But at the same time, you know what? I don't have anything more to say at the moment. I could talk about how disappointing Michigan basketball is, but I didn't watch it. I wasn't going to waste my time on that, Drek. We'll get into Michigan basketball here soon, but we're going to prolong, get away from it as much as possible because people are angry, and I get it. All right, so we will come back to you on Monday. So thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We've done, as promised, the six-day week. So excited about that. We'll talk to you again soon. Peace.